There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, do you think?
You know my rule.
I feel festive.
But Christmas isn't till December, so you can't do Christmas music until December.
Okay, but Georgia Morrow's been eating the Pratt Christmas sandwich every day this week.
She has. Every day for the past 2 weeks, a Christmas sandwich at lunch.
Yeah.
That's quite a lot.
That is quite a lot.
Christmas sandwich.
Which is why I think we should be allowed to play Christmas songs by now.
Okay, well, this debate can continue on and on.
Well, actually, it is quite a festive episode because I had Scandi singer Tove Lo in and we played a game of All About Christmas number ones.
Right. And I went to the fashion cupboard and I asked the girls all about party dressing.
Yes, exactly. Okay. We asked people their Christmas party dilemmas, didn't we? And then not so festive, but Georgia Murray's had her head in a book all week and she will be talking to us about that.
Yeah, a really good book, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I can't wait to hear about that. So I better get to the fashion cupboard to talk about party dressing.
Go.
Hi. Hi, Annie.
So I'm in the cupboard today and it's looking very festive. There's lots of sequins and well, there's always frills, but I feel like it's looking especially festive today, which is quite good because we're going to be talking about party dressing. Mm-hmm. So would you like to introduce yourselves?
Yes. I'm Ruby and I'm a stylist at ASOS.
And I'm Jo and I'm also a stylist.
And Jo's been on the podcast a lot, but Ruby, this is your first time on These Four Walls.
It is my first time. I'm very excited to be here.
Can we just actually start with, have you guys sorted out what you're wearing to the Christmas party?
I have, but only one thing. So I don't know whether this is too much information, but I recently got my ears pierced.
Did you?
So I'm starting with some big chandelier dangly earrings.
And that's the basis of your outfit?
Yes, it's the base of my outfit. And also, they're kind of a key party thing.
They're really good for this season.
Yeah, the bigger the better.
Okay, so Jo, have you decided what you're wearing to the Christmas party yet?
I'm going to start opposite end and start from the bottom. And I know I'm going to wear trainers.
Okay.
Probably a fishnet.
Okay, so our outfits are sort of half planned.
Yeah.
But should we talk about party dressing in general? So what is our take this season on party dressing?
The key things are era clashing, lots of 80s, lots of metallics and sparkles and prints and jacquard. So it's a really kind of...
sequins.
Lots of sequins.
Anything goes. More is more.
More is more.
This season. Okay, so we want to put on sequins. We want a bit of... big shapes for dresses. Mm-hmm. It's kind of very 80s.
Very 80s. Channeling your David Bowie, yes. Starman.
Okay, because on the catwalks, there were a couple of shows at Saint Laurent that had this amazing one-shoulder silver metallic dress. But then Ashish did, as they always do, sequins. But head-to-toe sequins in lots of different colours. Okay, so we're talking about more is more 80s sequins. And I can see that we've got a few pieces that we can talk through that we're kind of picking out.
Yes.
So should we start with the first one?
Yes. Let's go for what we're calling granny attic jacket.
So I think this is quite interesting for party because I wouldn't necessarily think of a jacquard in pastels as a party look. But how are we styling it? How are we making it into something to go to wear to your office party?
I would put it with like your 80s skirt. So, like your 80s lame glitter mini skirt,
okay,
like maybe like a puffball or in a foil.
Okay.
So, I think 80s skirt or maybe even like something with a big bow on it.
But then maybe just to, because then obviously we've got the puffball skirt, the pastel jacquard jacket. It would be quite nice to kind of
yeah,
add a bit more of a basic, like a tee, like a grey mull tee.
Okay, so, and it's also got a couple of brooches on the collar, which is quite a nice detail.
Yeah, so it's really nice to kind of add your own personal touch to things and like customization. So we have got loads of brooches and we just do little kind of add-ons by putting them on the collar, or you could put them on a little pocket. And again, it just kind of makes your jacket a bit more individual.
Okay, so it's the Jacquard Granny's jacket. And what's our next key piece?
The next key piece is it's the truly 80s one shoulder metallic silver top. And it's got a nice big 80s bow
on the shoulder.
So we're liking almost, bows, big bows.
Yeah, massive bows. Mm. It's almost quite like a corset as well with an added one shoulder. Because corsets are massive for the party season as well, and even going forward into spring summer 16. So even if you don't want to buy like a metallic silver corset, say
the shape is
the shape itself, you can buy something one in a more casual fabric, and so that will see you through until spring summer.
A bit more tailored.
So this top is actually ticking off a lot of things. It's metallic. It's got a big bow, it's corset shaped. Mm-hmm. Yes. So if you just bought this one thing, then it would be an update for the party.
Definitely. And then again, like to just pare it down a little bit, I'd put it over a little sports tee, like a little Adidas.
Okay, yeah. So layer it.
Yeah, layer it. Or like over one of like, you know, rock tees have been massive, something with a logo.
Okay. I think I'm really liking this one. And what is the next one that we're gonna talk about?
The next one is the animal print jacquard skirt.
So coloured animal, though.
Yeah. So
is that the update, then?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's rather than being your classic, it's pinks, neons, burgundies and navies.
Yeah.
And it's textured as well, so it's all about textures.
So with prints, would you then put this with more prints, or is this one about, how would you style this?
For a true party look, and for what we're talking about at the moment, I would say you want print on print.
Yeah,
and kind of the more print, the better.
So more animal print or a different kind of print?
I'd do a different kind of print. We've styled this skirt with like a gingham shirt or blouse. That's cute.
Shirts. We've been speaking about shirts over the last couple of weeks. Everybody in the office is wearing shirts.
Yeah,
shirts. So you can still wear your shirt to the office party.
Again, massive for spring, summer 17. So they'll see you through if you buy now.
I'm really nice with like keys, like little styling details. So it's really nice if you've got shirts with ruffles or bows or exaggerated sleeves. So they're really kind of cold shoulders. So really kind of playing around with proportions and cuts.
Great. Okay. Well, I feel like those three pieces are quite key, and I'm loving the silver one shoulder top. I actually went around the office and asked some other people at ASOS for their office party dilemmas, you may call them, but they had a few questions that I think it would be really nice if I put them to you.
And the agony aunts.
The agony aunts of the ASOS fashion cupboard, and you can answer them. So are you up for it?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, right. Shall we play the first one?
Yeah.
So I've got this jumpsuit that I bought for a wedding. It's navy blue with frill sleeves, and I want to rewear it for my Christmas party, but I want to make it feel a bit more special. I was just wondering if you could help me. How can I make it feel more special?
Right, so that's quite an interesting one. Something you've already worn, but you want to wear it again, but make it feel special. So how can we do that? Ruby?
Okay, I've got an idea for this. Why doesn't she get one of our sequined crop tops and layer it underneath?
Yeah, like their high neck as well. So even if, say, the jumpsuit might be a cowl neck, you know, so then you just get sort of a two inch neck detail.
A sequin sort of roll neck detail at the top.
Yeah, neck detail.
And cuff details as well.
Yeah, that's quite good.
Fluffy. Frilly.
Joe?
And then I'd finish it off with a fluffy mule. With a glitter heel.
Is it about adding a really jazzy shoe to make it feel a bit more Christmassy?
Yeah, I think shoes always mix things up.
So we have these ones here that are amazing.
Yeah, they're called Head Turner.
The Head Turner Mule, and they're navy and fluffy two straps. Then the heel is all pink glitter.
Yeah.
Okay, so I feel like that would make her feel special.
Really special.
Okay.
And if she wanted to really, really top off more the outfit, more. She can add a chandelier earring.
Ruby's chandelier. Ruby's chandelier earring.
And a hat.
Okay, right. Shall we hear the next one?
This year I don't really feel like wearing a dress, so what are my other options if I want to be smart?
Okay, so I feel like this could be me. Yeah. I don't really want to wear a dress. What can I wear that I'm still smart, but it's not a dress?
100% a suit.
A jacquard suit.
You've told me to wear a jacquard suit before.
Haven't we, Annie? But I think maybe even a move on from jacquard is velvet.
And what colour velvet?
Literally any colour velvet. Or, we've got a nice bright red one. Or
kind of jewel tones, quite rich colours.
That always feels really Christmassy as well. Mm-hmm.
Or, but we've also got this ASOS white. It's almost like a silvery mink colour. So it's not so in your face and it's very slouchy fitting.
Okay, so the colour's not that shitey, but the actual texture.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gorgeous.
Okay, should we have one more?
One more.
So I'm wearing a dress and I don't want to wear heels. So I'd like some advice on what shoes would still look nice. I still want to look smart, so I don't want a trainer. If you could help me with that, that'd be great.
So this could also be me. She doesn't want to wear heels, but she still wants to be smart. What shoe can she wear?
Annie, are you secretly phoning in?
Yeah, no. All of these people are me with different voices. So what can she wear?
In this case, it's got to be a loafer.
Right.
But maybe not your classic black loafer. We're doing
because that's
them,
quite office. Yeah, rather than office party, that's quite office.
But
wear.
To go from office to office party, I would get them in like any colours. We were doing them in lots of colours, all like metallics or even like tapestry.
Yeah, because we've had some silver loafers on site, and then the print is quite an interesting.
Yeah, printed loafer or like a bright pink or a bright.
And they'll
yellow.
Be very comfortable, and then if they're backless, you can just.
Or even you could add a nice sock. I was on a shoot yesterday, and Rock's lovely makeup artist had her loafers, and she had a fishnet sock with them, which is a nice way of kind of updating your shoe.
Great. Okay, well, I feel like I'm ready for the office party now. I've got loads of tips. I'm also going to be asking Shannon what she's going to be wearing to the office party.
I'm going to put her in head-to-toe sequins.
Okay, I'll ask her if she's up for it. All right, okay, girls, thank you very much.
Thanks, Annie. As usual, great tips.
See you at the party.
Bye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm quite excited about the Christmas party now.
Yeah, I know. And then I thought, oh, I've got loads of tips, but actually maybe I'm a bit confused because I've got too many tips.
Yeah, I think, thanks but no thanks, Jo. I'm not going to wear a full sequin suit. But
why
maybe
not? That will look very snazzy and nice.
I will look like a mirror ball.
Yeah, and all the reflections will happen on the dance floor and it'll be great.
Maybe I'll go down the velvet suit route.
But if we can't both wear a velvet suit.
Yeah, we could. We could be like Santa and elves.
Oh, should we coordinate? Actually, this might be quite good.
Yes. Georgia Murray, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Georgia. How are you?
I'm good. How are you both?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah. You're holding something in your hand today.
Yeah, this is a big clue to what your section's about. You are holding a book with a really cool front cover.
It is amazing. Yeah, the design's really cool. It is called The Good Immigrant and it's edited by Nikesh Shukla.
And it's got a quote from J.K. Rowling on the front.
It has.
I love J.K. Rowling.
An important, timely read.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling was actually one of the people who crowdfunded the book.
That's cool that it was crowdfunded. Was that on Kickstarter?
No, so it was on Unbound, which is pretty much a Kickstarter site where authors can pitch their ideas and readers can then fund the projects.
That's really cool. We can do These Four Walls, the book.
We could do These Four Walls, the book. It would be a long read. And what is the book about?
So it's a series of essays written by 21 British writers of colour. And they write about a whole host of things under the umbrellas of identity and race.
So who's contributed to it?
Well, there's Kieran Yates, who runs British Value Zine. Yeah, she's amazing. She writes about the fact that there is kind of no neat duality for British Asians upon returning to visit family in Punjab. And then actor Riz Ahmed.
He's in the new Star Wars.
Yes. Yeah. Really exciting. So he also writes about being typecast as a terrorist in films that he's gone up for, which is not good.
And there's a chapter, or the first chapter, is from the editor himself.
Exactly, yeah. So the editor is Nikesh Shukla, and he is an author, podcast host and writer. And yeah, he edited The Good Immigrant. And his first essay is about, it's called Namaste. And actually, we have him reading a passage for us here.
One of the many online arguments I've had about the importance of language and how language can hurt has been about tea. Chai means tea. Chai tea means tea tea. The number of times you see this on a menu makes you wonder why people can't be bothered to do their research. Like naan bread as well. Bread, bread. A comedian, Kumail Nanjiani, an avid gamer, once expressed his delight that the Call of Duty series finally set a level in Karachi, the city of his childhood, now one of the top 10 most dangerous cities in the world. He was appalled on playing the game to see that all the street signs were in Arabic, not Urdu. He talks about the effort put into making each follicle on each soldier's head stand out, into making their bootlaces bounce as they run, the millions spent developing this game, and at how at no point did anyone decide to Google the language of Pakistan. In Jurassic Park, they refer to Pachycephalosaurus dinosaurs as Pakis. The Pakis are escaping, one of the techs exclaims. The budget for the movie was $150 million. If I had to place a value on how much people would have to pay me in order to call me a Paki, it would be more than $150 million. Words matter. Words are important. The casualness with which someone I'm working with refers to two coloured girls. The casualness with which someone having their photo taken with a nice view and me in obscuring the corner of it asks her husband to ensure he gets one without the Indian in it. The casualness of being on the last train home from London to Bristol in the same car as the bar, listening to two white drunk men in their early 20s shout at each other, N-word, we made it, repeatedly with excruciating enthusiasm. They're just quoting rap, someone might think. They're drunk, they're harmless, they're exuberant, dickish but exuberant. But language is important. Years before, I sat in an Indian restaurant around the corner. It was called Oh, Calcutta. I found both exclamation marks alarming. The place was owned by a white guy. As I sat with my best friend and his then girlfriend staring at the disco lights, I listened to Kula Shaker sing about Tattva, about Govinda Jaya Jaya Gopala Jaya Jaya. I read the menu. One of the dishes listed was chicken chuddi, described as an exotic blend of authentic spices, tomato and peppers. It sounded so generic. What was an exotic blend? What were authentic spices? Also, tomato and pepper. These are what you're calling the biggest tastemakers apart from chicken in the dish. What the hell is chicken chuddi? Also, as you know, chuddi means pants. I told my friend and his then girlfriend. They laughed at the whiteness of it all. Ha 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 ha, they said. Cultural misappropriation is hilarious, they said. I felt mortified for the owner. He'd probably been duped by some guy who'd asked for a word that sounded Eastern. Maybe the chef was having a joke with him. Maybe he was having a joke with his clients. I looked around. Everyone in the restaurant was white. It was a student hipster paradise. The mix of cod Eastern Britpop minimal red lighting like a moody Ryan Gosling film and the prices. It felt like puppetry of food. The biggest crime. Not only was Western Balti curry now synonymous with my country's cuisine, but now we had white guys aping the food we made to fit in with the white guys. I called the manager over. The chicken chuddy, I said. You know that chuddy means pants, don't you? He laughed. Ha 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 ha, he said. You're having me on, he replied. It's a specific blend of spices. Nice try. It means pants, I repeated. He smiled, itching to get away. I let him. But language is important.
That was great. It was really nice to hear it read in his own voice as well.
Exactly. I'm a big fan of audiobooks. I actually got Nikesh on the phone to talk a little bit more about the book and how it came about.
Hi, I'm Nikesh Shukla. I am an author and the editor of a collection of essays called The Good Immigrant, which came out recently.
You're known, and I've seen on Twitter, and that you kind of long called out the publishing world for its lack of diversity. So can you tell me a bit about how that led to The Good Immigrant sort of idea first being conceived?
Yeah, well, I guess I got sick of being on diversity panels. I got sick of people in the industry, like, just assuming that writers of colour are complaining all the time and they only ever get anywhere because of tokenism or affirmative action, or like they know people and they never get anywhere because of merit. And I just got so sick of like talking about it on Twitter and like writing hot takes for The Guardian for blogs and stuff, and I just thought, you know, what can I do? And I know loads of amazing writers of colour, and I thought, well, and after a conversation on Twitter with Michelle Kwongo, who's one of my closest mates, and also just an incredible writer, I just thought, well, I can do this thing myself. You know, instead of waiting around for a collection of essays about race and immigration with like the growing need for those conversations to happen, especially like when you look at American like books like Citizen by Claudia Rankine and Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me, I just thought, you know, the UK needs to have a long, hard conversation with itself. And so I thought, well, I'll just do it myself. So I put together this collection. I knew a bunch of the writers. I admired a bunch of the writers. I knew like some like non-writers with some interesting stories. I know some other people who I was like, I'm intrigued by you, I want to know more. And like, the book wasn't conceived as any sort of political manifesto about immigration or anything. It was more about representation and just capturing these stories by these writers in their own voices. And so like, my brief to them was, you tell me a story and I will get out of your way and you tell me that story. And so some of the stories, like some of the rhetoric disagrees with itself, or some people, like there isn't a party line like throughout it, which I think is really interesting, and actually like a thing that's not really been done before, because like people from BAME backgrounds or people from marginalised communities were asked to be the spokesperson for our entire marginalised community, and I don't want that responsibility. Like, you don't want that responsibility. No one wants that responsibility. And like, like, why is it so revolutionary that a bunch of writers of colour from a marginalised community are able to write with nuance and disagree with each other and have different opinions and have different stories to tell? Like, that isn't revolutionary and that isn't groundbreaking in any way.
I think the second essay in the book by Barreto sums up really nicely. Yeah, in the last sentence where she says there's no, something along the lines of there's no one way to be black, and that's just such a lovely ending to that, and it sort of is apparent throughout the entire collection. Yes, but it is quite astounding that people are surprised by that.
Yeah, and often I think diversity is interesting because Satnam Sangera, who's another writer, once said that the problem with diversity is like so often we're like black and Asian and minority ethnic writers are expected to be excellent and we have to be amazing all of the time, and that's why so few of us get through it. And actually when you look at the amount of mediocrity in books and in the arts, in fashion and films from white people, like we would like the opportunity to make shit films and bad books and average songs and like okay hot takes. Like, that's true diversity. Ultimately, I do think that books and films and music and like fashion, like they can change the world. Like, we, like, I do think the arts have a social responsibility to, you know, there's this brilliant quote from Zadie Smith where she goes, like, in white teeth, actually, Barreto reminded me of this quote, and I've been like saying it a lot, so thanks to her for reminding me of this quite a bit. There's a line in White Teeth where Zeddy writes, "There was England, a gigantic mirror, and there was Irie, who's one of the characters, without reflection." And I think that's how people from marginalised communities feel. Like, they feel without reflection. And there's another brilliant quote from Juno Diaz, another writer, where he goes, you know, think about like how vampires and monsters don't have any reflection. Like, the way to strip anyone of their humanity is to deny them at the cultural level any reflection of themselves.
Yeah, that representation missing.
Yeah, representation is so important. I like, you know, it's not, you know, I think, you know, like when we think about anti-racism movements and like things around mass incarceration and, you know, police executions of bad people in America, like obviously this isn't nowhere near like that end of the spectrum of like what's going on, but I do think like at a societal level it's a basic right of people to be represented, to feel, you know, if we're constantly asked to assimilate and integrate and count ourselves as British or English, then, you know, at some level we have to see ourselves reflected in British society.
I guess that brings us back to the name. You kind of came up with it because of a friend telling you that you can either be a good immigrant or a bad immigrant, or at least that's how it's perceived. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So that was the same conversation I was having with Michelle Huang. And actually, like, the idea of like the good immigrant is an idea that sort of predates the title of the book. I just stole it. you can't copyright titles. But it is this idea that like your default starting position as an immigrant or as a child of an immigrant or as like a person of colour, when you are other in the Western world, it seems you start from this default position of being like a bad immigrant, like you're here to steal jobs, or you're here to steal women, or you're here to steal like the places in the GP waiting rooms, or you're here to like wreak economic havoc on like people who like are getting pushed out of their jobs and all this sort of stuff. And then like you, like the way you can become a good immigrant is to like transcend in the public eye. So like you win the Great British Bake Off, or you you win gold in an Olympic medal. Like Mo Farah should be like by rights the Daily Mail's worst nightmare, but like, he's a sign of multicultural Britain. And like look at Nadia Hussein, who was like, you know, she won the Great British Bake Off, like a charming example of Britishness, and she was a good immigrant. And then she goes on Desert Island Discs and talks about how she's been treated differently and experienced casual racism because she wears a hijab. And then, like, Liz Jones basically, like, rails against her in the Daily Mail, and she becomes a bad immigrant again. And, like, you just think, who is making these rules?
Stop categorising her. So the book was founded through Unbound, which is such an amazing idea. Until reading Good Immigrant, I didn't know about it, and I've now signed up. It's such a fantastic idea. And you hit the target in 3 days, which is amazing.
The thing that Unbound does is sort of take the power of word of mouth away from, like, the sort of the mainstream, like, book mainstream places of, like, word of mouth, like book pages and literary editors and, like, book bloggers and stuff, and it puts it in the hand of readers, which I think is really powerful, because ultimately I'm not necessarily looking for an amazing review in The Guardian. I'm looking for loads and loads of readers to read it and go, oh, that book really inspired me to go and do something positive, or, like, I feel represented, and that gives me more of a stake in society. That's what I'm looking for. Like, I'm looking for readers. I don't care about the bloody mainstream white literary editors or what have you. When you ask the question, like, why are there hardly any books by writers of colour published? Why has a major publisher not put out an exciting debut by a black British male writer in like the last 10-15 years? They go, well, there isn't really a market for these sorts of books. Who reads books by black and Asian people? Black and Asian people don't read. And you go, oh, well, that's insulting. First of all, oh, you've reduced my skin colour to a marketing trend, and he told me it's a not very lucrative marketing trend. And when people go, well, publishing's a business, we have to make money, like, I don't know, there isn't a market for this. What they're actually saying is, I don't know how to sell this, I don't understand it, I don't feel connected to it because it's not by someone who looks like me. And that's why representation is important, because if people within the industry are like going, acting like representation like gives them the necessary empathy and enthusiasm to to sell stuff, then like, we need that space as well. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, what better way to show that there is a market for these books than a platform that funded a book to exist before a word of it was even written?
Talking of sort of obviously the writers in the book you love and think have so much to sort of say that we need to listen to, where else do you get your, where else should we go if we want to read works by writers of colour, both British and international? Obviously there's Galden, but yeah, where else should we check out?
Well, yeah, Galden, Skin Deep, Media Diversified, they're all doing amazing things. I really like, I guess the thing I tend to do is just follow the right people on Twitter, and they tend to flood my timeline with amazing things. I really think BuzzFeed Reader is doing some amazing things as well, and producing,
okay,
highlighting some incredible writers of colour.
What advice do you have? Like you said, Liv actually said that you've kind of been a mentor to the Galden girls, which is really lovely. But do you have sort of any advice for budding novelists or editors or people who sort of want to get into that world?
Just write the thing that you want to write. Don't pander to any, like, to the white gaze. Don't pander to what you think is publishable. Just, you know, and, you know, tell the stories that aren't being told. And the other thing is, this is just a simple thing, like, before you even send your book out to any agents or editors or other writers, just finish it to the best of your abilities, and then find someone who can give you an outsider perspective, and get them to give you feedback, and then edit it, and then send it out to people. Just make it really hard for people to say no, and often the best way to make it hard for people to say no is to just make sure something is finished.
Okay, cool. That's really great advice. Thank you so much, Dikesh.
Cheers, bye.
Bye.
Right, I really need to get a copy of this book.
Yeah, same. Secret Santa?
Yeah, we should leave one on everyone's desk.
Yeah, it's out now, right, Georgia?
Exactly, so you can get any good bookshop online, and make sure you check out Nikesh's other books as well.
Yeah, we will. Well, thanks, Georgia Murray.
Thanks, Georgia.
No worries. See you guys next episode.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, so what have we got coming up next?
Well, next up, we've got everyone's favourite Scandi singer, Tove Lo, and things are about to get festive again.
Why?
Because we're going to be talking Christmas number ones.
Okay, but we're not going to be playing any Christmas number ones because it's not December yet.
What about singing them?
You're going to sing them.
Last Christmas,
to Tove Lo.
On the very next day, you gave it away this year. So I'm here with Tove Lo. Hi, Tove.
Hey.
I'm saying it wrong, aren't I? How would you say it?
No, that's right. Yeah.
Tove Lo. Yeah. Okay. Welcome to ASOS, which is unnaturally cold today.
Yeah,
we've
I know.
Had to wrap you up in blankets.
Lucky, yeah, you're lucky you got all these great fashionable coats here that I can wrap myself up
in. We did. Tove's currently sporting, what have we found there? It's like an orangey faux
fur. It's an orangey
coat over the legs.
Thing, yeah, great.
It's very nice. So when did you get to London?
Yesterday night, yeah.
What did you do last night?
Nothing. I'm a little bit sick, so I kind of just went straight to... We landed at like around midnight, so I was kind of straight into bed.
Yeah. That's tiring. I feel a bit ill too.
No,
this
no,
is a very coldy podcast.
I came from LA back to Sweden on Wednesday last week, and I think and it was snowing in Stockholm, so I think that kind of just hit me really fast. And,
quite Christmassy though.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's beautiful.
Do you get to go back to Stockholm a lot? I've seen your schedule's pretty crazy at the moment. I was just looking at your tour. So you go on tour December through till March, April?
Yeah, I would say that. And then it's like festival season starts. So it's pretty much going to be like...
No rest for you.
No rest for me, no. I love it. I love touring. I think it's like one of my favourite things. So, yeah.
Where are your favourite places to play?
One of my favourite places, I think... I mean, so many, but the one that was probably the... like. Biggest experience was probably Rio de Janeiro.
Oh, really?
In Brazil. Yeah, that was amazing.
Why? What was so good about it?
Well, just it was my first time ever being to Brazil, and it was just like just the vibe of the city, and it was so beautiful, and the fans that I met there were just so like insanely excited. Like, I've never, like most of my fans are like very sweet and you know, excited, but this was like next levels. And we played on top of like Sugarloaf Mountain.
No way.
So it was just like everything was just very like unreal and amazing.
That's so cool. That sounds like an amazing show.
Yeah.
And then what do you like to do when you do get home, when you do go back to Sweden?
Well, usually just see my friends and my family and my dog that I never get to see.
Oh.
I mean, I get to go home like every 3 months or so, but it's usually for just like a couple of days, so it's really quick. But I hang out with my friends, just kind of chill. I usually do have some like need to go into the studio and record something or like kind of still music elements, but and I always try and go and get like a massage at like one of my favorite places. Because it's just awesome.
Yeah, I could really do the massage right now. Well, hopefully you won't be in the studio for a little bit because your second album is out now, Ladywood.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good. It's so exciting.
Thank you. And I'm so happy with it. I'm really, really happy with like all... I try not to read too much what people are saying, but the ones... But like I did like, you know, going and see like what my fans think and everything, and it's been so much love, so I'm really, really happy.
Yeah. I've read quite a lot about what people are saying, and it's all being like super positive.
Oh, good, thank you.
You also decided to release a short film with it, which is, I've watched this morning, and it's very dark and it's like so hypnotizing. Like, what was the idea behind it? So there's a short...
It's about the first chapter of the... So Ladywood's divided into two chapters, Fairy Dust and Fire Fade. And I work with Tim Aram, who's my creative director on it, and we, so it's a short film about the first chapter, so it's called Fair Dust, and the whole album is about chasing rushes and kind of doing things that scare me and turn me on at the same time, doing things that make you feel the most alive and kind of the upsides and downsides to that. So Fair Dust just shows that kind of the first stage of it, when it's just kind of like a beautiful escape and everything is new and exciting, and it's like... you don't feel the consequences, but there are consequences. And I think, like, the movie, I play against this amazing actress, Lena Esko, who she represents sort of my self-destructive alter ego.
She's
in the
so
film.
Good at it.
She's amazing. She's amazing. And she kind of represents, like, what, like, a side of me that, like, I don't really like, and also, like, my worst nightmare to become fully.
Yeah.
And I wrote the monologues to that, which is also like a very new thing for me, where like she acts out, you know, my words, which is kind of a crazy feeling. But the whole film is about kind of my love and hate relationship with her, like falling into that behavior and feeling very free in that. And kind of it's a relief to just let everything go, you know, and then kind of trying to pull myself out of it, but then finding other things to escape to, kind of. And It's very dark, it's very sexual, and it has a lot of, like, just kind of... I think it's a powerful message, but also, like, even if you believe in something, there's always another side to it, you know? Even if you're like, oh, I'm not trying to paint, like, the perfect picture of anything. It's just reality. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I think every upside has a downside,
yeah,
and I'm just showing all of it, really.
I think even well, with your first album as well, you've always been very open about those kind of emotions. So it's refreshing. It's very cool.
Thank you.
So Fairy Dust is out now, and it's about half an hour, isn't it? And that's available on YouTube, so go and watch it. And the album is out now too, so go and listen to it. Now we're going to play a little game. Are you ready to play?
I'm ready.
Tova, high or lower? Okay, I've got the official chart in front of me from last Christmas, okay?
Ooh.
So from Christmas number one down to number 25.
Okay.
I am going to tell you a song, and you're going to have to tell me whether you think it placed higher or lower than the previous song. Okay, so there was a re-entry from Wham last Christmas.
Ooh.
Do you like it? That used to be one of my favourite Christmas songs.
But I mean, yeah, but how do I answer if it's higher or lower?
Oh, I'm going to tell you another song.
Okay.
you're in game mode now.
I was like, there's nothing to compare to. Yeah, okay.
Yes, I like it. Is that the right answer? Okay. So Wham, Last Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that is higher or lower than What Do You Mean, Justin Bieber?
I'm just going to say higher just because...
It was lower.
Lower?
So
I mean, Bieber, obviously, I think, feel like he wins everything. But
those believers. So Wham was at number 18 and Bieber, What Do You Mean, was number 5.
Okay, well, all right.
Okay, what about History by One Direction? Higher or lower than What Do You Mean by Bieber?
Probably higher because they're from here.
It's the Beliebers managed to beat the Directioners because it was close, but One Direction was number 8 with History. Okay, let's do one more. There's another Bieber. There's 3 Biebers in the charts.
Oh, I mean, for sure, he's awesome. He deserves it. No question there. But yeah, I felt like you'd give like your UKers some more love. I know.
Well, apparently not. Mm. Love Yourself. Do you think that came higher or lower than What Do You Mean by Bieber?
Higher?
Yes.
Bieber beat
himself. Yeah. Do you want to do one more?
Ed Sheeran wrote that, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He spoke to your hearts. Yeah.
Oh, so the British people got a bit of love. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do one more. Hello by Adele. Massive song, but did it manage to knock off Bieber, Love Yourself?
Yes.
No. Adele was number 4.
He's killing it. Okay.
Yeah. So this time last year, Bieber absolutely smashed it.
Isn't he Canadian? Yeah.
Canadian, right? Mm. What would you love to see as Christmas number 1 this year? Or which artist?
Christmas number 1. I feel like I haven't gotten into it. I've never been like a big Christmas song person, honestly. So I don't like... I feel like I wish for a, like, I don't know who would do it, but like maybe like 1975 do a remake of I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas.
That would be cool.
Yeah. I don't know why that just came to my head right
now.
I just feel like that would be amazing. I don't know if I can make that happen.
Have a word.
I'll reach out for sure. Yeah. Guys, here's my wish for Christmas. Thanks.
All right.
Maybe if I knew them, but I've never even met them, but I'm a fan. So, yeah.
Hey, I think social media will make it happen.
Yeah.
Tevin, thank you so much for coming in. You've been amazing.
Thanks for having me.
So Bieber was basically up against himself last Christmas.
Bieber was basically Santa. And I can't believe he beat Last Christmas because that is my favourite Christmas song.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how I feel about
it. I won't sing. Instead, I will say thank you very much to Tove Lo for coming in and joining us. And also thank you to Nikesh Shukla, who Georgia Murray spoke to, and that amazing book.
And I can say thank you to Joe and Ruby, our stylists, for schooling us on what to wear this party season.
Yeah, some great party season tips. If you like us, don't forget to rate us and subscribe on iTunes, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
And tune in next episode for more from These Four Walls. One day, Annie was walking to the fashion cupboard, and she had a coffee in her hand.
Annie, why are you talking about yourself in the third person?
This is our audiobook, These Four Walls, audiobook.
Okay.